This is Meg Rose interviewing Mary Rhodes at Halsey Manor on the 10th of March. It's now 11:25, and Mary would like to add a little bit more about Ruth Tung. Okay, if you'd like to tell me a little bit more about Ruth Tung.
After she died, she bequeathed all her notes, archive really, to Jeff and Bessie Rye. Jeff at the time was librarian here, and all the material was stowed away in boxes in the cellar here, which is rather damp. However, it was probably safer there than it had been during her lifetime, because she kept she had kept material belonging to her uncle, who was Sir Edward German, in the donkey stable. So when her cottage was burnt down in 1967, a lot of his material was burnt down with the cottage. However, her own material, which was, stored by Jeff in the cellar here, stayed here, actually, until I started going through it in 2002. I don't know quite how much time she did spend at the manor during her latter years, but I think she came out here fairly regularly. Certainly she had a great reputation established by the time I returned to the manor in my later years. People were very uncertain about whether her material was authentic or whether she'd made it up herself. There were always two schools of thought about that. But her songs they're very distinctive, but they are very good songs. They're good to sing, and they have interesting stories in them. And her folklore was certainly approved by Dr. Catherine Briggs, who, of course, is the authority on this sort of thing. And the Folklore Society had become very interested in her by this time. She has published several books of her own. She did Chime Child first. She also did volume 7 or 8 of the... 7, whichever is the Somerset one, of the County Folklore Tales. She did another book, together with Catherine Briggs, Forgotten Tales of the English Counties, or something like that. We can check up on the actual story. She's written a lot of plays, which she has either had published or printed herself, and which used to... She used to put on with women's institutes. Now, I gave a talk to one of the women's institutes locally about her, and they remembered so clearly being in one of her plays. And they were absolutely appalled when I suggested that there'd been any doubt about her authenticity. In fact, they nearly threw me out of the meeting when I said that, because they believed in her wholeheartedly. And people did believe in her wholeheartedly. She... Pause. In 2002, the council were becoming a bit worried about what was in the cellar, and Sian Bigwood was on the council at the time, as company secretary, I think, and she was one of the few people who remembered Ruth Tung for what she'd been doing. So she was talking to me about it at one point. She was one of the people that used to be around in the 1960s, doing a lot of dancing, and so she still knew me. She was talking to me about it, and so we decided that together we would go through it. So we started coming down here every Tuesday morning for months, actually, looking through all her stuff and trying to sort it out, and wondering what to do about it. So eventually I decided that I would put it together, or we decided that I would put it together and produce a book out of it, because there was so much there that ought not to be locked away and unavailable. So we put it together, and eventually the council did publish it as a book, which is on sale now, and so anyone here can buy it.
Tell me about the book, tell me about the title.
Songs and Stories of Ruth Tung.
Thank you.
And yes, you can buy it in the office or at the shop for £15, and it all goes towards the Halsey Manor Society. And it's actually got a good, steady, slow but steady turnover because people are interested in her. And what we did with the material, I put into it, under this book, all the songs that had never been published anywhere, and there are 100 or more. Some of them were just songs that I knew that I'd sung with her that hadn't ever been published, and one or two, some from Bessie Rye, which had also not been published, and then all the rest of the stuff that was in the boxes. And then she had been working on what she called the Greenwood Tree Alphabet, which was a traditional folk story concerning an example of a tree from every letter of the alphabet, which was really very good, and I felt should have been illustrated as well. But that didn't happen. But I did manage to reproduce her Greenwood Tree Alphabet, which I think was really worth having, and I think there's a lot of value in that that hasn't yet been really appreciated because people are after it at the moment for the songs. So it took me 4 years from beginning to end, and I felt very pleased when I'd done it and gave her a little bit of her background from my point of view. It had to be from somebody's point of view, and all these things are very subjective anyway. But I was very much enthralled to her, I think, as a child. She's the sort of person you don't forget in a hurry. She was very disorganised about her personal life. She was also quite a heavy smoker, which is probably why her cottage burnt down. As well as the ponies that we used to ride at weekends, she took on a rescue donkey, which had been on the sands at Weston-super-Mare. It was called Selina Mouse the Second. Apparently, she'd had a donkey in her past called Selina Mouse the Third. So this was Selina Mouse the Second. And it lived at the side of her house in a sort of lean-to or stable, I suppose. And that's where she kept her uncle, Edward German's material, which eventually got lost. Another of her ploys, because she was always involving all the children in writing and plays and everything, she had us all gardening. All the children in the village had a little plot of garden in her garden, which we were responsible for, which I think was a brilliant way for her to get her gardens sorted out. And her water was pumped up to the house. And so one of the last jobs on a Saturday morning, if we'd been in her up to her cottage, was to pump the water through. That's for the older children. But yes, dressing up. She was dressing up and doing things. She was a great thespian. She really was. And the other thing that she was very, very interested in was the Monmouth Uprising. Intensely interested in that. I can't actually, though, recall that we ever did any plays or poems or declamations about it, though we did come across the odd song or two in her archive. Anyway, her archive is still here at the Manor. After we'd finished sorting it all through, we put everything away again in a rather more organised form so we can get at anything we need to, if anyone's interested. And so
again, that's available?
That's available, yes, for anybody who needs to see it. Yes.
Very interesting. So, was she married?
No.
No offspring?
No. And she had two nieces.
Right.
That was all. Her elder brother had been district commissioner in Kenya, and her younger brother was killed at Gallipoli, and she never really got over that, I think. That really hit her very hard. They were a very close family. Her father was a Unitarian minister, and when she was a child, he was working at the North Street Unitarian Church in Taunton, which is how she came to be in Taunton. And in actual fact, for some years after they first moved to Taunton, they were living in Taunton Castle, in Castle House in Taunton. And she claims to have seen ghosts there because the supernatural was another of her interests. And she spent a lot of her childhood in and out of the market, because Taunton Market was at that time held on the parade or beside Castle House, And I think she used to slip away from her nanny and talk to the market holders. And if reading through Chime Child, one certainly has the impression that she spent a lot of her time amongst the market storeholders, talking to them. And the songs that she has produced, she claims she learned as a seven-year-old, mostly in Taunton Market. And I find that is really not unbelievable, because it's so easy to remember snippets of what one knew when one was very young. And she didn't ever make anything of them until later, when she was in her sort of 50s or 60s, and she started thinking about it. And this is when she produced her Chime Child book. And she made a lot of effort to recall the various songs she'd learned at the time. And I think this is one of the reasons people think they're not authentic, because she probably misremembered some of the tunes very slightly. So all the tunes have a sort of recognisable sameness about them, which is probably her input. But nonetheless, we wouldn't have songs like that from anybody else. And a lot of the subject matter was, again, is recognisable, fairly idiosyncratic, but not the sort of songs that you find anywhere else. So quite often one can hear a song and think, that sounds a bit like a Ruth Tong song. So it is, in a way, a very valuable little collection. Because a lot of them came from Taunton Market people, or if they didn't, they were inspired by Taunton Market when she was a child living in Taunton Castle. And what a background. But she actually moved away from Taunton when she was 11, I think. They moved up to London. And thereafter, she only came here on holiday until she moved here in 1954. So although she will always talk about herself as a Somerset person and a Chime Child, she is neither. A Chime Child has to be born between midnight and cockcrow on a Friday, but she was born on a Monday, and she was born in Staffordshire. So this is another of her self-made legends. She was very, very good at reinventing herself. And like a true thespian.
But did you sing any of her songs?
Oh, yes. I've always sung her... Well, since I was a child, I've sung her songs, and I found they were quite well received in folk song clubs, because there was nothing much like them. But since I came back here, and I've been... You know, since I produced the book and things like that, if ever I do anything... And I don't really do folk song clubs or anything like that anymore. I've grown through it, grown past it even. But I occasionally, I've been down to the Halsey Folk Sunday Club and things like that. But I make it a matter of principle now only to do her songs, because somebody has to sing them and put them out somewhere. And so I've taken that upon myself.
Very good, good. You mentioned ghosts, Ruth Tong. Sort of talking about ghosts. Apparently, people say that there's a ghost here at Halsey. Have you heard about that, or any stories?
We have several ghosts here, but they're all benign, quite friendly ones. There's a white lady who walks between Bicknoller and Crocombe, or Crocombe and Bicknoller, looking for her dead husband, or her dead husband's grave. She tends to walk through the long room occasionally, apparently. There's a bishop. There used to be a bishop who would pelt apples at people, apparently. I don't think he can find any ghostly apples these days. He was cross. I can't remember exactly why he was cross. But I think he was in what was the chapel, which no longer is here. And he was reputed to throw apples at people going past. And then there's a monk who walks along the gallery above the hall. I won't tell you the rooms in case anybody hears it and gets scared, but there is one of the bedrooms where somebody occasionally goes through, and somebody here has, on the occasional staff, has woken up a couple of times and felt that somebody was sitting on their bed. And there's also a baby that cries, and there's a long story about that one as well. But all the ghosts are very benign and seem quite friendly. Nobody feels spooked by them. But this is a very interesting manor. It's had quite a varied history, and it's never had one single family living here like so many manor houses. It's had, well, apart from the Stradlings, who are here from the well, who married into the family that were here. They stayed here until the 1600s. And since then, it's had a variety of families, of different people living here, including an artist's colony in the mid-19th century, north and so on. And they actually, very serious artists, they have pictures in the Tate. Some of them are scenes at Halsey Manor, and the V&A, Tate and the V&A, which is really quite exciting.
How interesting. Mm.
Yeah, it's a very varied history, but always a sort of arts side to it, I think. Mm.
Tell me about, I've just noticed the there's a door, which is presumably, it's a fire exit.
Yes.
But in the door, there's a stained glass window
mm.
with the English Folk Dance and Song Society, The Knot.
Yes.
And
MGL, Margaret Grant Library. This was established, I don't know why, as the Margaret Grant Library. I don't know if what connection Margaret Grant had with Halsey specifically. She was the FDSS representative in Devon, and Marjorie Hunt was her deputy before she was married. So I imagine there's been some legacy of some sort there. But I don't know the actual connection. I ought to, oughtn't I?
Interesting, isn't it? Because Bill Rutter, he was the Devon.
He was, yes.
Wasn't he? He was based yes. in Devon mm. For the English Folk Dance and Song Society. Really very interesting. Thank you, Biddy. Well, again, if you think of anything else that you want to
of
add,
course,
we can
yes.
do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.